All right, everyone, it's the Grim Lord here, and yes, we're gonna do it. This is Dead and Aegis. Told you we're gonna bring it back to you. So here we go. We did it. Nana cheers. Wow. Minori whispers in disbelief. The plan Commander Kinnison prepared for the offensive reconnaissance unit was nothing short of reckless. Upon being detected by the CC flyers, the troopers were to let them approach as close as possible before undoing their special warfare gear. Each of them was given a portable buzzer device. When activated, these improvised devices would transmit the cancellation buzzer into their special enhancement gear's communicators. Hearing it causes their force fields to be undone. Since the CC have learned to acknowledge special warfare troopers as beings with force fields, they would lose sight of the girls when they didn't have them. Or when they don't have them, rather. On top of that, losing their force fields would cause their velocity to suddenly drop. The FBs, unable to detect them, would continue moving forward and away from them without changing their own speeds. In case the idea failed somehow, the two gunners of the group would undo their gear slightly later than the rest. If the plan wasn't working, they were to disperse and offer covering fire for the other six. If the plan failed at the first layer of the wall, their orders were to abort their mission and focus all their efforts towards returning to base. But they succeeded in their duty. They did it. They broke through the CC's thick, multi-layered wall and managed to get behind them. There are a few key reasons why they succeeded. For starters, even Nina Kisaragi, the slowest of the group, is faster than the average special warfare trooper of their year. On top of that, all of them are highly proficient at quickly redeploying their force fields. And most importantly, they were lucky. They can already feel that their next maneuver during this operation will have an even higher chance of success. Yes. This reconnaissance duty is, in effect, simply a rehearsal for what comes next. We still need to scout things out. Begin scanning ahead. They concentrate their consciousness forward, reaching out with their arms like they're trying to grab something in the distance while they strain to extend their detection range. Further! Further ahead! And just as Minori starts to faintly sense Paradise Lost in the distance... No way! This can't be! How is this possible? As Ayusha says this, First Lieutenant Adira Shastri, who has a similarly long-range detection radius as her, gasps as well. With each passing second, more and more of the girls raise their voices in shock. Just as Minori starts to feel anxiety in her heart, she sees it for herself. No! No, is that... Protruding from Paradise Lost's spherical silhouette is a second round mass that looks almost as though it's splitting off of Paradise Lost itself. They all know what it is. They've seen it again and again in old recordings. The jewel thief? Well, why? Wasn't it crushed like some big pimple? During the invasion of Earth, this massive flying entity was at the heart of the CC attack. The entire UEF military was powerless before it. Even Lysette, who always destroyed the CC so effortlessly, couldn't directly oppose it. This monster drove Earth to the brink of despair. But then Lysette moved the moon, tossing it to the alien. And what can only be described as a miracle, she destroyed this monster and saved the Earth at the 11th hour. Mankind survived, but to do it, they had to sacrifice their oldest companion, the moon. The alien stole the moon, that jewel that shone in the night sky. Hence, mankind named that alien the Jewel Thief. Minori heard that Paradise Lost has been growing larger and larger ever since mankind first discovered it. Maybe the reason behind that growth was because the CC were producing this thing. Mankind's original strategy was to buy time until they found a method to definitively destroy Paradise Lost. It got to the point where some people began to hope that the situation would remain that way forever so that they could continue profiting from the war effort. Imagine that. But mankind weren't the only ones making good use of their time. The CC were doing the same. For these last 9 years, they were recreating this terrible monster. They're planning to settle the score from 10 years ago using a decade's worth of accumulated resources they intend... I forgot the period was there. Using a decade's worth of accumulated resources, they intend to break through the cathedral and wipe out the Earth. There, right before the 8 girls' stunned eyes, the section containing the jewel thief to Paradise Lost rapidly contracts into itself, separating the monster from the planet. Letting out a newborn scream, the jewel thief is born into the cosmos, reincarnating again before mankind's gaze. Yusha gathers her wits and calls out, "We've seen what we needed to. Return to base." August 25th, 2109, 0536 Standard Space Time. It takes the Offensive Reconnaissance Unit a mere 35 seconds to recover and report the Jewel Thief's presence to HQ. The Offensive Reconnaissance Unit's breakthrough left the Central CC force in a state of disarray, temporarily restoring communications. Commander Kinnison orders the deployment of all special warfare troopers and the firing of all the Cathedral's weapons, marking the beginning of the alien extermination mission, Operation David. Same day, 0645 Standard Space Time. The 20 special warfare troopers on standby begin to deploy, attacking the enemy's Formation A. Same day, 0732 Standard Space Time. 8 of the special warfare troopers' first year group's gunners open fire on the CC, marking the start of the battle. Their concentrated fire converges into a bright flash of light that instantaneously destroys one of the UMBs. The Offensive Reconnaissance Unit uses this chance to successfully break through the rear of the enemy lines. They regroup with the special warfare troopers' main force without any casualties. The special warfare troops' corps position themselves for maximum combat efficacy. The gunners rain range fire on the enemy while the vanguards hunt down any FB units that try to move in on the gunners. The gunners fire volley after volley of concentrated fire, grinding down on the ivory walls of the UMBs until they're little more than white gore. But while it seemed that the special warfare troopers were able to shake off the enemy's pursuit during their retreat, same day, 0841 Standard Space Time, the two flanking wings of the CC's formation catch the special warfare trooper corps in a hemispherical encirclement. When the CC's right wing moves forward, the veteran troopers who deployed shortly after the first years intercept them with Lysette at their head. They launch a focused attack where the CC forces are most concentrated, crushing them in an instant. With that, the veterans slip behind the enemy's main force, Formation A. But the enemy soon sends in reinforcements, including Pyrrhuses, that plug the gap knocked into the right wing. This leaves the veterans trapped and encircled. The gunners of the Offensive Reconnaissance Unit notice this development earlier than anyone else. They rain fire on the enemy's encirclement, preventing them from completely cutting their comrades off. This opens in a corridor through which the veterans successfully retreat. However, as the veterans fall back, a final group of FBs attacks the veterans from behind, resulting in the first two casualties of the Great August Invasion of 2109. Only 17 veterans escape with their lives. The two special warfare troopers that fell behind during the retreat are surrounded by the FBs, who tear them limb from limb. All the other troopers can vividly sense their gruesome ends. Feel sense is not right. But the special warfare troopers don't waver. The first years are well organized under the veterans' command and take every chance to continually inflict damage upon the CC. They continue raising blasts down on the CC until the wall of white canopies is torn to shreds. The vanguards tear through any swarms of FBs that approach. It's a one-sided massacre. But while the special warfare troopers excel in direct combat, they can't stop the CC force from gaining ground. Formation A continues to approach Cathedral Space Sector. While the CC weren't capable of stopping the Offensive Reconnaissance Unit from breaking through earlier, they become much more organized once the Pyrrhuses enter the battlefield. They no longer allow their opponents to so easily break through and encircle them. Seeing their forces being pushed back, the operators and staff officers all grow anxious. Even though they've been briefed on the situation, it's been years since they last saw the base under such direct threat of attack during the Great August Invasion. If the special warfare troopers were to be defeated by this suddenly organized mass of enemies that would mark the destruction of Earth. But one Iron Man, Commander Kinnison, remains unperturbed. Seeing him retain his composure calms the officers' anxious hearts. His next move in this cosmic game of chess is carried out upon the battlefield. Same day, 0955 Standard Space Time. The special warfare troopers' first years continue to launch ceaseless barrages of accurate, lethal attacks at the enemy without suffering any casualties. They're coming! Commence the operation! At Ayusha's order, G1 and G14 split off from the troopers' main force, retreating outside of what they calculate to be the CC's detection radius. Minori can sense their destination before it comes into view. a hurtling cluster of gigantic rocks, each about 30 feet in diameter. These are launched via electromagnetic rails set up on the cathedral's outer circumference. Asteroids this large moving at this velocity would pulverize all but the toughest CC upon impact. However, mankind has never used this kind of weapon against a nimbler CC before. After all, the highest speeds the power of science can achieve can't hope to match the velocities at which the CC and the special warfare troopers move. Any CC or special warfare trooper would be able to dodge these massive projectiles between their wide detection range and their personal agility. Commander Kinnison knows this, of course. Minori, Nana, and Ayusha match their speeds with fifth rock in line, where an open door carved into the rock's surface awaits them. The interior is a simple boxy space that doesn't even have any lighting. As soon as the door closes behind them, a cancellation buzzer rings out and undoes their special warfare gear as air rushes to fill the small space. The only thing visible within the tiny dark room is a countdown timer. The sound of the girls' nervous breathing echoes in their ears. They've been fighting since early morning, leaving their bodies dripping with sweat. The freezing temperature rapidly cools their sweating bodies, allowing a deep chill to settle into their bones. This room gouged into the rocks is merely an airtight chamber equipped with oxygen tanks and little else. The three girls shake, their teeth chattering in the cold. The only thing they can think of as they glare at the countdown timer is that it's cold. Turn to zero already. Soon enough, it does. The girls grip their encased wands in unison, redeploying their special warfare gear. The doors blast open, sucking out the scant amount of air within the room into the void of space. The process throws the troopers out into the heart of the CC's Formation A. The CC moved out of the way to dodge the asteroid hurtling towards them. In other words, they created an opening through which the girls infiltrated their lines. The gap extends all the way back of the enemy lines. The trio speeds forward until they shoot past Formation A entirely. Only when there's nothing between them and the Jewel Thief do they finally turn around. With a sweet moan, Ayusha deploys her bits and fires off a Gugnir shot. The force field around Minori's body burns up, turning into a gigantic sword. She plunges herself into the enemy ranks that were struck by Ayusha's fire and swings her energy blade, cutting the CC to bits. Once the raging swarm of FBs notice the enemies have appeared the enemies that have appeared behind them, they attempt to surround them. But those FBs are then caught by a second attack from behind that completely annihilates them. The Pyrrhus commanding the formation is killed, sending the CC's ranks into disarray. Just like G-14, G-1 concealed themselves in one of the launch asteroids to redeploy behind enemy lines. The CC lines dissolve into chaos now that G-1 and G-14 are wreaking havoc in their rear. In a display of what is either or pure coincidence, Nana and First Lieutenant Olivia Gregory manage to stop the few FB that sneak past their comrades. Their shields, one shimmering in the colors of the rainbow and the other uniform obsidian black, curb the CC advance and allow the other troopers to slay them. But there's only six of them, and they're surrounded by countless CC. The enemy is gradually rallying. It seems that the group's fate is to be isolated and butchered behind enemy lines. Pyrrhuses fly to and fro, bringing the CC formation back into order. The three rows in the back turn around and attack the six girls. But just as they do, the reorganized CC lines are yet again attacked from behind. The special warfare trooper enveloped in the blade of light effortlessly overruns them. The CC formation has been penetrated by the veteran unit led by Lizette. Her blade is as sharp as ever, and the CC that turned around to handle the six first years can't react in time. Once the Pyrrhuses are hunted down, the CC ranks once again fall into disarray. Same day, 10:23 standard space time. The veteran special warfare troopers link up within two groups of first years and launch a savage attack into the rear of the enemy lines. At the same time, the rest of the first year special warfare troopers charge in from the front. Pincered from both sides, the CC's formation A is completely annihilated. The veterans split up, raiding the CC's right and left wings. Unable to react in time, the CC Pyrrhuses are quickly eliminated without a chance to regain their bearings. Formation A is never given a chance to regroup as the chaos continues to escalate. The CC flyers even start bumping into each other, causing their lines to collapse before they can even launch a counterattack. Those who attempt to retreat are easy pickings for G1 and G14. Those who try to press forward are hunted down by the rest of the first years as they press the attack. The first year's vanguards are still relatively fresh, having only been on guard duty most of the time while watching their gunners fight. They now burst into action, passionately striking the CC down with all their pent-up aggression and resolve. The troopers' high-pitched moans fill the void like coquettish music that accompanies their banquet of death. It is the finest display of individual combat prowess the Special Warfare Trooper Corps has ever displayed during this time of year. Same day, 11:02, standard space time. With the central formation that made up the bulk of their forces now destroyed, the right and left wings of the CC's forces link up to fill the void created by the destruction of Formation A. As the UMBs slowly deploy their canopies, the FBs flock around them like swarms of insects. The Special Warfare Troopers are focused on slaying their enemies, and only a handful of them remain in the central battlefield, which is where the FBs are converging right now. It may look like these few soldiers are being surrounded, but even that is part of Commander Kinnison's plan. The FBs swarming those lingering girls turn into a gigantic black mass that surrounds them as if meaning to crush them. But just as the CC flyers begin to converge, several dozen rays of light pierce their ranks. The CC are so densely compacted together that each ray takes out 3 or 4 FBs at once. 3 volleys of these rays are fired at them. The cluster of FBs is torn apart. The few that survive seek out cover behind the UMBs again. The Special Warfare Troopers' guided weapons, such as the Yusha's Bits, are joined by melee attacks from the likes of Minori and Lizette and overrun the remaining FBs. With most of their highly mobile FBs gone, the CC attack has been almost entirely defanged. The UMBs narrow their white umbrellas and begin retreating. With no soldiers left to command, the Pyrrhuses flee, but the Special Warfare Troopers give chase to further pad their kill count. By using those few Special Warfare Troopers as bait, Mankind made it seem likely that they overextended and became easy prey for the FBs. But in fact, they carefully assumed positions from which their gunners could concentrate their fire and wipe the remaining FBs out. Those unfortunate Special Warfare Troopers that were crushed to death in the process did their duty as decoys. And Commander Kinnison's eyes, this was the most effective way to use and consume them. No, that's not true. While it looked like the troopers were consumed by the flock of FBs, the girls were able to keep them at bay by deploying multicolored force fields. They are all heavily armed defenders like Nana, but overlapping their defensive force fields together, they were able to hold out against the FBs' combined offensive while it lasted. That was why they were given that mission. In total, the Special Warfare Trooper Corps only suffered the loss of 2 veterans. Although 2 other first years overextended during the battle and had their special enhancement gear torn off by a trio of FBs, the girls were rescued in time before they could be finished off. The Special Warfare Troopers' greatest crisis became their greatest success. Not yet. The enemy's strongest offensive juggernaut is still in play. The Jewel Thief. While the Special Warfare Troopers were crushing the CC's forces, it continued to close the distance between itself and the Cathedral. Even if the Special Warfare Troopers attack it, it's unlikely they'll be able to destroy it. Same day, 11:37, standard space time. The staff officers can't celebrate their victory, at least not yet. Their Supreme Commander has already made a move to eliminate the incredible monster threatening them. The foundation of the Commander's plan slowly reveals itself on the monitor. A massive rock measuring 12 miles in length. This is the core of their alien extermination mission. They named the rock Chicxulub, after the Mayan word for the devil's tail. So it'd be Chicxulub. They named this rock after the very same meter that drove the dinosaurs to extinction. The asteroid was caught by the main anchor's gravity well long ago, falling into an unstable orbit around the cathedral over the years. All they need to do is apply a bit of force in order to send it flying away. They just have to give it that final push. So how do they move it? Are they going to attach rockets to it? No. The Special Warfare Troopers of the Offensive Reconnaissance Unit will use all their power to fly through space and simply give it a push, an anachronistic, inelegant method. However, no rocket developed on Earth can hope to match their thrust. Using Special Warfare Troopers is actually the most effective way of going about it. Back then, Lizette moved to the very moon, so an asteroid far smaller than that should be easy for those troopers to push while working together. The troopers scatter themselves across Chilob's surface, beginning the operation. But will such a small rock be able to defeat the Jewel Thief, when last time they had to bash the moon itself against it? Yes. Yes, it can. After the battle for lunar orbit, the Jewel Thief's remains crumbled away before mankind could collect and analyze it. But the fact they crumbled away so easily implied they were biological in nature. The Jewel Thief is not hard in the same way solid rock is. In other words, as long as they can break through its force field, any solid bash with a hard object should crush it easily. Analyzing the gravitational data of the approaching jewel thief supports this hypothesis. The density of its body is clearly far lower than that of most minerals. In other words, if there had been any asteroids available during the lunar orbit battle, Lysette wouldn't have had to use the moon. The problem with this projectile is that, unlike the rocks they launched earlier as decoys, this one has to actually hit its intended target. Still, based on earlier combat data, they calculate that the sluggish jewel thief shouldn't be able of moving quickly enough to evacuate Chuzzlewub. Same day, 11:56 standard space time. The recording device mounted onto Chuzzlewub's surface shows the jewel thief and the CC accompanying it are growing larger and larger as the distance closes. Even the UMBs were like specks in front of the majesty of the jewel thief, the greatest of all CC. The special warfare troopers can see it in space, while the staff officers, the operators, and the commander all watch the main monitor. Other officers watch it from the monitors at their stations. Media crews watch it in the VIP room. They all await the moment of victory with bated breath. Only Commander Kinnison watches it unfold with calm eyes. The jewel thief makes no attempt to dodge, and maintains its current trajectory like it's trying to ram into Chuzzlewub on purpose. In cosmic terms, the distance between these two large masses is basically nothing. As everyone watches over nervously, anticipating their coming victory, same day, 11:59 standard space time. All the monitors flash with blue light before going completely dark. The collision shouldn't have happened quite yet. Is this a mechanical malfunction? As the staff officers and operators raise their voices filled with fear and anxiety, Commander Kinnison remains collected. Switch the screens over to the base's main sectors. Major Cersei Bernhard hurriedly operates her console, performing the switch. The jewel thief is unharmed. However, Chuzzlewub is gone. What used to be a giant rock on a collision course is now nothing more than a thick cloud of debris. That's absurd! Did the Chinese jewel thief destroy it? How? It fired at it, probably some kind of beam. Analyze the data from the main sensors. Cersei hurriedly begins her analysis and soon produces the results. Your hypothesis is correct, sir. It seems the jewel thief fired some kind of beam from the blue depression at its center. It's a shocking revelation. The CC have never used beam weapons until now. The closest thing mankind has ever witnessed was the beam the Pyrrhus fired toward Paradise Lost before being destroyed, but that was thought to be merely a burst communication. They probably only learned recently that this phenomenon is a viable weapon. As the staff murmur in fear, Commander Kinnison remains composed. Our staff officer rises to his feet, raising his voice in a shout as if trying to cut through the strained atmosphere. I don't think it can fire that kind of a weapon consecutively, though. And we still have Vredefort and Sudbury. Chuzzlewub isn't their only asteroid in store. 60 miles behind it is another meteorite called Vredefort, and 60 miles behind that is another one called Sudbury. These gods of destruction are named after the three biggest meteors to ever strike the Earth. But two more blue flashes are produced, pulverizing the Earth's guardian deities. Most of the debris that pelts the jewel thief is completely deflected by its force field. Only the largest of the remaining fragments manage to make contact with the jewel thief at all, dealing superficial damage, but its approach towards the cathedral is uninterrupted. It keeps moving, confidently, as if asserting that it is the true god of space. Same day, 11:59 standard space time. The girls of the Special Warfare Trooper Corps watch as a flash of blue light floods the space before them. The three reincarnations of the gods of destruction that once gouged into the earth are crushed to bits, with the jewel thief advancing with a stately dignity. With stately dignity through their debris. The girls are shaken by the sight. How are they supposed to defeat this monster? The girls gather into their groups, talking amongst themselves while staring anxiously at the gigantic imposing enemy. Minori, can we really beat this thing? It's not like it's completely unharmed, but considering the weapons we have, I don't think so. At least probably not. A few of the biggest fragments that survived the Jewel Thief's attack managed to penetrate the Jewel Thief's force field, cut through its tentacles, and hit its body. Its crustacean-like carapace was cracked by the impact. The rocks gouged into its core with a splatter of blue liquid. However, none of the damage it took seems to have hindered the Jewel's East performance. In fact, the troopers can watch its wounds already rapidly healing. The blue liquid that gushed from the cracks is hardening like clotting blood. A few of the gunners packed at the sight of it healing and started raining fire on it, but their shots failed to penetrate the Jewel Thief's force field. Well, I guess there's no point to us staying here. Yes, I agree, but we haven't gotten any new orders. Minori thinks they ought to retreat. With their current strength, the Special Warfare Troopers probably won't be able to deal any damage to the Jewel Thief. But she doesn't have the authority to make that call, and the commander hasn't given them any instructions. But Purgatorio's in such a bad mood. Maybe they're sending us orders and we just can't receive them because of that. The flares from Purgatorio are so hot they can feel them on their skin. Its raging filled their communications with static. A few of the other girls are trying to send transmissions to call for help, but to no avail. I think Cersei can still use her special transmission, but at times where communications are unavailable, Cersei's power is the only method they can rely on. But even that channel is silent right now. Did something happen? Like what? Nana casts an anxious glance on the cathedral's direction. Well, in the movies, the twist is that at times like these, the base is already taken over by the enemy. No, that can't be. But Minori isn't denying Nana's words because she's confident that they're wrong. She only does so because she's unnerved by the thought. Are communications the only thing not working right now, or did something really happen at the base? The Special Warfare Trooper Corps are in trouble, yet their commander leading them is nowhere to be found. Since they always fight in groups of three, they were trained to operate independently in those formations, and indeed, they've always performed their duties skillfully during patrols. Even now, everything was going just fine until the Jewel Thief appeared. HQ was managing command of the Corps as a whole, and all they had to do was simply follow instructions. But now that they've gotten into this situation, it's clear that they should have nominated a field commander. Within the Corps, Lisette Agaro holds the highest rank of Major General, so she should be the one commanding them. Some of the girls turn to Lisette and the veterans, hoping for guidance, but they're completely unresponsive. All they're doing is wordlessly cruising through space a short distance away. Minori recalls what Lisette looked like when the inspection committee was using her as their plaything. She didn't look like a mentally stable, functional human being. The ancient Special Warfare Troopers similarly realize that there's no one to control them, command them rather, starting to panic. But just then, a sharp voice reaches their ears. Everyone, listen to me. I'm Yusha Petrovna from G14. The commander told me what to do in case we lose communications with the cathedral. With Yusha serving as the commander's mistress, her words seem entirely plausible. All units return to base, that's all. One of the aces has already turned back. First Lieutenant Amandi Kabaki. Following her are the other members of the Offensive Reconnaissance Unit, with the exception of Minori and Nana. It looks like they were instructed to do the same, too. No one seems to object. The veterans don't agree with or refuse Yusha's instructions either. They continue to remain silent. Once we get back, I'm gonna take the longest shower. This isn't over yet. Nana's mundane words makes a few of the girls giggle. Yusha regroups with the two of them. I'm sorry I didn't tell you about the orders ahead of time, Minori. No, I wasn't in a state of mind to think about it. You could have told me. I feel betrayed. I didn't tell you because you're stupid. Wow, mean, but fine. It sounds like a drag anyway. Hey, I wonder why our music is so loud. Voices on max. Doesn't look like the seniors agreed to it, though. That should be fine. You saw the state the Big Hero is in, Minori. She can't make any decisions one way or another. The other seniors must be in the same state. No! That means that come next year, Minori and the others might be like this themselves. No, if all their seniors are like that, then it's not a possibility. It's a certainty, an inevitability. We won't end up like them. Don't worry. I'll handle everything. When we get back, I'll flush out all the vermin in the base. What do you mean? You'll see. Same day, 12:09, standard space time. The Special Warfare Trooper Corps began their return to base. Even the three Special Warfare Troopers that fruitlessly fired at the Jewel Thief have given up and decided to retreat. Just then, Minori is overcome by a sense of foreboding. Oh no! She turns her head towards the source of that uneasy feeling. There before her eyes, the surface of the Jewel Thief seems to bubble. Countless objects are gushing from its surface. Noticing something wrong with Minori, Ayusha turns around too. Oh crap! Minori shouts at her, run away! But her warning comes a moment too late. Countless CC flyers emerge from the Jewel Thief's blue holes, immediately swarming the retreating Special Warfare Troopers to turn their backs to them. The gunner's force fields are naturally weak defensively, and they've already exhausted themselves in their desperate, fruitless attempts to attack the Jewel Thief. I have to save them. I have to. The moment Minori thinks that, she feels something burn intensely in her abdomen. Blood rushes into her sensitive nipples, causing them to grow erect at once. Her clit swells up even more, squeezing against the stimulation ring, grasping it. Pleasure rushes through Minori's body so intense it threatens to fry her mind. By the time Ayusha lets out a suggestive moan and fires Gugnir, Minori has already bolted forward. A thick, warm void of the space sector brushes against her insensitive, aroused flesh, leaving her body burning up from the sensation. Love juices spill from her cleft as a CC organ deep inside her throbs. It's like every part of her body is demanding for something thick and hard to plow her. Vivid memories of the disgusting sensation of Callahan and Kinnison's cocks fill her mind, making her pussy and butt clench up with longing. No! I'm a soldier! I'm here to fight! She writhes, trying to resist her aroused body. Somehow, she still manages to fly. A burning force field forms around her, turning into a gigantic sword that she thrusts forward. No, I can't come on, not yet, no! She struggles to hold back an orgasm while unleashing her gear's acceleration mode. Huh, they dodged? None of them have ever dodged my shots before. A few of the CC flyers move in to intercept Minori. But faced with the power of Minori's force field sword, they're powerless, or so she thinks. The CC flyers' surroundings flash with blue, swiftly taking on the form of a swarm as a sword as well. Wow. No way is this. A shadow closes in on her rapidly. The blue and the red force fields clash, only for the blue one to shatter. But the flyer swiftly dodges away from the red force field before flying away. What was that? It's just a CC. The Minori gets chills just looking at the way it moves. It feels profane, but somehow familiar. Despicable, and yet that form. And the way the enemy deploys its force field. It feels like a Special Warfare Trooper's armament. Minori can hear Special Warfare Troopers screaming in the distance. No way! A blue beam easily pierces through the force field of a Special Warfare Trooper gunner who's clad in Eastern Priestess's garb. As her Special Warfare gear evaporates, all the fluids in her body heat up at once. Her body swells up and explodes, turning into fragments of flesh that go flying through the void. Was that friendly fire? But as Minori eyes her with terror, the CC open fire again, this time aiming at Ayusha! At the last second, Nana deploys a prismatic force field between Ayusha and the beam, deflecting it. Ayusha, are you okay? Thanks, Nana. What the hell's with these things? Some of these enemies are weird. Be careful. These things shoot at us, and some of them even act as shields. It's like they're imitating us. Minori turns to look. Hiding among the flyers are things that look unfamiliar, and at the same, all too terribly familiar, like something strange that crawled out of a nightmare. They look almost human. They have legs, they have heads and torsos. Two swollen protuberances that look like breasts and a pair of legs and arms each. But at the same time, they're terribly, utterly, and clearly inhuman. Their bodies are covered with pallid dead skin that is dotted with holes and crisscrossed with tears. Even their crotches are gaping holes as if they were gouged out. Every broken, torn section of their jiggling slime-like... Every broken, torn section of their bodies has jiggling slime-like tumors growing out of it. If they were human, they couldn't possibly be alive. Not with their necks snapped and their uteruses gouged out. These weren't people, but corpses. If they weren't, then they were surely made in the image of the bodies of the dead, mangled until just barely still recognizable. And they writhe, like they're alive. The way they move feels like an affront to all that lives. A few of the special warfare troopers scream. The blasphemous sight of these corpses is the very definition of cosmic horror. Yet this isn't fiction presented in the comforting limits of media. It's real, and right in front of them. The same day, 1221 Standard Space Time. The panicked special warfare troopers attack blindly with their weapons, but the incoming beam attacks pierce through their weakened force fields with ease. Defenders and vanguards don't have many openings in their defenses, and so their casualties are minimal, but the gunners drop like flies. This is bad. Everyone defend your gunners. Without their ranged attackers, they won't be able to slay the FBs from a distance. The FBs, with their overwhelming numbers, are incredibly menacing in melee combat. We have to be calm. We won't make it if we don't collect ourselves. Ayusha desperately implores her comrades to heed her words. But as if to take advantage of their confusion, flocks of FBs fly in from between the retreating UMBs. Special Warfare Trooper Corps' accuracy is greatly diminished. They fail to prevent the FB from closing the distance, resulting in hectic fighting breaking out in every direction. As highly trained and experienced as they are, when attacked in such numbers from every direction, all the troopers can manage is trying to flee while striking down enemies in their path. Any soldier, no matter how skilled, eventually reaches a moment of despair. After hours of insistent fighting and flight, even their developed bodies will eventually be driven to the brink of climax. Their erect nipples, twitching pussies, and developed anuses will be injected with tranquilizers that weaken their force field. If that happens while they're surrounded by FB, their fates will be sealed. Their weakened force fields will be torn apart, leaving them naked, save for the special enhancement gear. It won't be long before that weaving will be torn away, and the CC will force their penis-like organs into the troopers' every orifice until their uteruses are pulled from their bodies, killing them. Even if they manage to stave off this terrible death, the corpses will block them off with their force field shields, pierce them with their beams, and cleave through them with their swords. These corpses seem to have the ability to wield all the abilities of the Vanguard, Defender, and Gunner Special Warfare Troopers. They might not be fighting as a unit like the troopers are, but instead they spring from the ranks of the FBs in ambushes. Fear and despair fills the void as the girl's shrieks and screams of agony overlap. One voice calls out, "They killed Zhu Jilan! She was a skilled vanguard and part of the offensive reconnaissance unit. A corpse killed her. A corpse cut her up from behind." By now, the special warfare troopers are no longer cooperating. Staging an orderly retreat is impossible. Purgatorio's intense ripples still undulate through the void, blocking off their communications with the HQ. No, even in this situation, there are still units maintaining their cohesion. They move in a textbook manner, their defenders forming walls, their gunners fighting from the gaps in those walls, and their vanguards hunting down scattered enemies. Lysette and her veteran unit haven't fallen yet either. Same day, 1210 Standard Space Time. A deafening silence hangs over the integrated headquarters. The operation is a resounding failure, but one calm voice breaks the silence. "What's the situation on the front lines?" Yes, the jewel thief is confirmed to be intact, but we don't know anything more than that. Purgatorio's solar winds are cutting off communications with the Special Warfare Trooper Corps. Major Cersei Bernhard used a special channel to order the Special Warfare Troopers to retreat. There's no melancholy of doubt in his words. The Iron Man takes even defeat into consideration. But not everyone can be like him. A retreat? The enemy's on our doorstep. If they retreat, the enemy will attack the cathedral itself, and if that happens... The commander's collected voice cuts off Deputy Commander Chan's shaking words. Correct. The CC will destroy the cathedral and mankind will be driven to extinction, and we have no weapons to stop them. There are still some large asteroids in Purgatorio's orbit. Why don't we have the special warfare troopers retrieve them and use them to fight? The cathedral will enter the Jewel Thief's firing range before they make it. They have the first years retrieve them and push them onto a collision course for Paradise Lost, and call the veterans back to defend the base. If we shoot a massive projectile at Paradise Lost, the aliens will have to call the Jewel Thief back. That way we'll avoid this disaster. The deputy commander speaks angrily, a vein pulsing in his temple, assuming that he let them approach. But the commander cuts his argument down. If the first year unit suddenly changes course for the debris orbit, the CC won't just sit idly by and let them do it. And to get to the debris, they'll have to go through the Jewel Thief. Then what are we going to do, Commander? Stop denying every option. If there's a valid option, please tell us. Commander Kinnison's next words come without hesitation. We'll call back the special warfare troopers and have them focus on defending the base to buy us time. Meanwhile, we prepare to evacuate all personnel so we can self-destruct the cathedral. Once that's done, we abandon the base. Wow. The moment he says self-destruct, an eerie silence settles over the integrated headquarters. If we blow up the cathedral and shake up the main anchor, it should be enough to make this space sector's gravitational balance collapse. With the pasta tube blocked, the CC won't be able to evade Earth. If any CC flyers manage to get through the pasta tube in the process, the Special Warfare Trooper Corps stationed at the exit will exterminate them. This calm commander sees even the cathedral itself as a little more than a weapon. A little more than a weapon. There's no A there. Deputy Commander Chan parts his lips, breaking the silence. His voice is terribly cold. By self-destructing, you mean destroying the cathedral? There's no other explosive capable of blocking the pasta tube in this space sector. Deputy Commander Chan rises to his feet. Despite his anger, the movement still seems awfully abrupt. There'll be no going back if you self-destruct this base. I think we should gamble on taking a final chance. We can self-destruct the base whenever, if we have to, but we cannot afford to lose the cathedral. It's the one thing we must not allow. Then what do you suggest we do? We call back the veterans and have them protect this base and have the first years pushed to debris. We cannot afford to lose the cathedral. It's the one thing we must not allow. He speaks in an odd, disconcerted fashion like a broken record. Splitting our forces now would be foolish. The first years won't succeed in moving the debris on their own, and the veterans alone will fail to protect the base. We'll lose everything if we do that. Another staff officer rises to their feet, then another. They all stand up out of sync like each of them was programmed to move individually. It's almost like the commander mentioning the cathedral's destruction was some kind of trigger. We cannot afford to lose the cathedral. It's the one thing we must not allow. We cannot afford to lose the cathedral. It's the one thing we must not allow. We cannot afford to lose the cathedral. We cannot approve this. Deputy Commander Chan and all the staff officers draw their guns from their holsters and aim them at Commander Kinnison. I see. Yes, she was right after all. There's a fatal blind spot in this base that I've overlooked. The sound of multiple gunshots echoes through the integrated headquarters. Blood splatters over the commander's seat. His hideous swollen body slides from his chair and crumples to the floor. Deputy Commander Chan gives Cersei an order. Relay this special transmission. The first years are to move Debris 9 Gorath and push it on a collision course towards Paradise Lost. The veterans are to return to base as quickly as possible and form a last-ditch defensive line around the cathedral. We cannot afford to lose the cathedral. It's the one thing we must not allow. Cersei Bernhard twitches, preparing to activate the special transmission. Remaining seated at her operator's station, she fondles her own large breasts. Her hand creeps under her skirt as she starts groping herself. The staff officer's voices overlap. We cannot afford to lose the cathedral. It's the one thing we must not allow. We cannot afford to lose the cathedral. It's the one thing we must not allow. We must not lose it. We must not lose it. Protect it with your lives. Deputy Commander Chan looks around the integrated headquarters. His gaze is rigid, more like that of a robot than a man. Commander Kinnison's body is missing. Despite being shot so many times, he has managed to crawl across the floor and escape the room. He left a smear of blue, luminescent fluid leading to the door like a snail's trail. The deputy commander's muddled eyes follow the trail's path, He then grabs a nearby microphone and speaks in a mechanical tone of voice. All Cathedral staff, Commander Kinnison has gone mad. As such, I, Deputy Commander Chan, have assumed command. Find Kinnison. When you do, shoot to kill. He then makes an addition to the command. Make sure to aim for the head. Same day, 12:43, standard space time. Despite suffering massive casualties, the Special Warfare Trooper Corps are gradually regaining their footing. Their veterans continue fighting in an orderly fashion. With them forming the Troopers Corps, the first years are able to reorganize themselves. They coordinate their maneuvers as they deploy around the veterans, forming a spherical formation. The exhausted gunners are positioned in the center of the formation. The defenders make up the formation's perimeter, forming barriers. The vanguard charge forward when appropriate, eliminating any foes that evade the gunner's fire. By fighting in the systematic manner, the Rattled Girls recall the roles that were driven into them through weeks of arduous training. They successfully destroy four large waves of FBs rushing towards them. As she deflects some of the rays aiming at the gunners, Nana finds the time to speak. I was really scared for a minute there. The moment Nana says this, he uses Gugnir, destroys a corpse that managed to approach the Special Warfare Trooper's lines. Don't let down your guard. It's not like we didn't take any losses here. Minori can tell that their formation is far from perfect. True, they were able to rally around the veterans, but their seniors are basically fighting on their own initiative, forcing the first years to struggle to keep up with them. They aren't actually coordinating with each other. It's this sloppiness that makes the corpses such a threat. Even the debut of the purest specimen, whose presence seems to coordinate the CC and the units, hasn't changed the way the CC flyers themselves tend to move in set, predictable patterns. But the corpses suddenly swoop in, launching attacks into the troopers' blind spots. They don't abide by any patterns. Almost all the Special Warfare troopers' latest losses are because of the corpses. One red-haired, dark-skinned corpse that keeps appearing again and again is especially menacing. It always suddenly appears from behind an FB when one of the troopers is engaged in melee combat. In this way, it has already claimed the lives of three Special Warfare troopers. And on top of that, the Jewel Thief is gradually closing the distance between them. The moment the troopers are within the range of that asteroid-destroying beam, it'll all be over. What in the world is HQ doing? Do they even know what's happening? But just then, a voice penetrates the void of space. A directive to the Special Warfare Trooper Corps. All veteran troopers are to return to the cathedral as soon as possible and defend the base. All first years are to make way to the falling coordinates to the rock known as Gorath. Change its direct trajectory, and send it on a collision course for Paradise Lost. The instructions that they were so desperately waiting for only serve to prove that HQ has no grasp of the current situation. Gorath is the name of an asteroid more than 90 miles wide that's currently orbiting Purgatorio. It's rumored that it was being saved for a counteroffensive operation on Paradise Lost. Once mankind seizes control of the surrounding space sectors, they would change the course of multiple large celestial bodies to bombard Paradise Lost. This gigantic asteroid would supposedly serve as the finishing blow. If this thing were to hit Paradise Lost, it would probably inflict a crippling blow against the CC. The Jewel Thief would likely need to be diverted from its attack on the cathedral to deal with it. However, if the plan had any real merit, it would have been enacted the moment the Jewel Thief was detected. The reason they weren't told to do it was simple. It would take the entirety of the Special Warfare Trooper Corps to shift the orbit of such a gigantic asteroid and send it flying towards Paradise Lost. What's more, the calculation was made before the Corps took unprecedented losses in this battle, losing more than 10 of their members. It's doubtful they could move the meteor at all at this point. Finally, as large as Gorath and Paradise Lost might be, they are both simply specks in the scope of the massive space sector. Trying to launch a speck at another speck and have one hit the other would require extremely accurate aiming and control. To do such a thing with the CC swarming all around them is effectively impossible. In other words, the Operation HQ is proposing is... Are they stupid? All they're doing is splitting up our forces! It's just as Yusha said, the plan is absolutely foolish. Oh no, the veterans are running off. Yeah, of course they are, because they think it's stupid too. Minori's eyes widen as she looks at the veterans. Same day, 12:45, standard space time. The veterans abandon their positions and begin retreating, led by a single Crimson unit. Same day, 13:12, standard space time. Commander Kinnison moves through a restricted access corridor, opening the biometric coded lock to reach the base's generator room. The generator room was built into the main anchor, hidden deep in the underground levels of the base. The nuclear fusion reactor placed here is the heart of the cathedral. Did I say cathedral? Yeah, okay, whatever. Anyway, the nuclear fusion reactor placed here is the heart of the cathedral, providing power to the rest of the base. I've been waiting for you. This is the only place you'd go if you're dead set on blowing up the cathedral. Major Cersei stands in his way. In her hands is a large, heavy rifle emblazoned with the Baggetholm conglomerate's emblem. Yeah, we got that right. Its muzzle is aimed at his chest. It's so close to him that would be more accurate to say that she's sticking it into him. Kinnison is such a large, corpulent man that there's no way she can miss. I thought I'd ordered the place locked down today. No one was allowed to enter. The commander replies, seemingly unfazed, even while at gunpoint. I'm sure you failed to notice, but no one doesn't include me. I see. I knew there was a blind spot I was overlooking, but I didn't think it would be you. The fact that you even noticed there was something you were overlooking is commendable in and of itself. The muzzle angles up, pointing at Kinnison's head. And I never would have guessed that I myself was a CC. This whole war was a farce. The CC fighting other CC. Boom! Well, there's your big reveal. Commander Kinnison was a CC the whole time! Commander Kinnison's body was pierced by countless bullets earlier, but already there's no trace of those wounds. No, you're not a CC, Commander. Same as how I'm not a CC either. Then why do you reject me? If the cathedral falls and they invade the Pasa Tube, mankind will be finished. You're actively helping them. You really are a CC, aren't you? Cersei's brow furrows in displeasure. I'm not a CC. Why would I ever want to become one of those things? Then what are you trying to do? How do you intend to protect the cathedral? Cersei's expression turns ecstatic. Lysette Augereau would make this right, just like she always does. Lysette always finds a way. She seems to be like a pretty much zombified fuck doll right now. I don't think she's gonna be too much of use. Her eyes, filled with a strange and manic light, gaze at the obese man smiling sardonically in front of her. I'm afraid I'm not that kind of zealot. I can't blindly worship a hero like you do. Oh, but you are a zealot. You blindly cling to the faith that you can defeat the CC by consuming everything that you have. That includes the cathedral. That's the one thing I can't let you do. If nothing else, we can't afford to lose the cathedral. Not now. Even if you don't agree with me, I still have to do it. Commander Kinnison, you're the ultimate commander, and Kinnison's corpulent form suddenly bolts away. Cersei hurriedly fires at his back. The bullet hits his abdomen with a splash of blue fluid, but it does nothing to slow down his charge. Major Cersei Bernhard, you were an excellent soldier, but you were never a good shot. She fires three more bullets into his large back. Kinnison falls to his knees, but he still manages to climb into the seat in front of the console. Once his credentials are verified, he swiftly punches in the self-destruct code. The timer for the self-destruct sequence begins to tick down. When Cersei approaches him from behind, Commander Kinnison rotates his chair so he can face her. I don't know what particularly care if you're a CC, but mankind will not be defeated. I will remain human to the very end. She thrusts the muzzle against his head. Farewell. You were the person I loved most after Lizette. The back of his overgrown head ruptures. A combination of his pale brains and bluish blood splatter over the console's monitors. For a few moments, Cersei stands still, the gun still raised in her arms. I think it can be activated 2 hours from now. With those words, a figure appears from the underground corridor. Both his white coat and hands are filthy with blue blood. It's gonna take you 2 hours? The Indian doctor shrugs at Cersei's displeased question. I understand you're not happy, but I can only do so much. I can't bring along my aides for this after all. I know, I was just asking. Cersei speaks with a firm tone, like she's masking her impatience. She throws her rifle away, almost as if the object disgusts her too much to bear touching for any longer. Did he suggest blowing up the cathedral? Trying to use up and consume everything he can is typical of him. The doctor casually pushes the remains of the commander's head off the console. Did he input the self-destruct code? Cersei nods. You probably changed it ahead of time anyway. Cersei nods again. You're still a human at heart. You let him input the self-destruct code and gave him a false sense of victory before you killed him. How kind of you. His words aren't meant to mock her. His tone sounds genuinely delighted. He'd have to sit down to input the code, which would make it easier to shoot his brains out. I'm not a very good shot. Her voice sounds a bit irritated, but the doctor doesn't pursue the matter any further. Now then, it should take Lizette's group an hour or so to return, and then another hour to activate this. Think we can make it? Lizette will sort this out. There isn't so much as a hint of anxiety or fear in her voice. Yes, that blind faith is very human of you. I suppose I'll gamble on your faith pulling us through then. Same day, 12:45 standard space time. Minori and the first year stand frozen in place as they watch the veterans begin their retreat to the cathedral. Following their orders to return as soon as possible, their vanguards rush ahead, leaving their rear guard behind. Among them, the red unit containing Lizette moves exceptionally fast and soon leaves Minori's detection range. Lizette abandoned us. The great Lizette turned her back on us. Don't leave. Please stay with us. A few of the first years shout at the veterans, pleading with them to stay. With the veterans' vanguards pulling away, the CC forces swoop in and slay the defenseless rear guard. The veterans are gouged into, raped, and murdered. It can't be! Minori can't help but call out in shock. They didn't really turn their backs on approaching enemies to retreat. They may as well have rolled over and invited the CC to come over and kill them. None of them are even trying to fight back. They're just blindly following their orders. You saw the state the big hero is in, Minori. She can't make any decisions one way or another. The other seniors must be in the same state. Ayusha is right. The sheer foolishness of the veterans' actions leave the first years flabbergasted for a moment. The first year's hesitation is as fatal as veterans' folly. The veterans' retreat created a hole in the troopers' formation. Soon enough, CC flyers pour through it, charging at the first years. The CC take the stunned first years from an unguarded direction, launching a brutal surprise attack. The battlefield fills with the screams of girls. One after another, they're pierced through with beams, or torn apart by the FBs for their wounds. Even defenders who haven't yet suffered any losses since the beginning of their attack are among the casualties this time. Even as the troopers try to rally, the enemy overtakes the center of their formation and splits them apart. Their lines are gradually torn, shredded, and dismantled. Each of the girls is individually surrounded and preyed upon. It will only be a matter of time until they're all killed. Everyone, we have to group up! They'll just pick us off one by one at this rate. Nana, Ayusha, where are you? Minori calls out, trying to pull their lines back into order. But since she pulled ahead to attack the enemy, she's too distant from the other two in her group. No one can group up in the middle of this battle, and since it's in the void of space, there's nowhere to hide either. Each of the troopers is individually strong, but just as ants can swarm mantis, they can be overwhelmed by sheer numbers. Unleashing one powerful attack only after another only brings them to the brink of orgasm, at which point the special enhancement gear applies sedatives that weakens their force field. Once that happens, the CC superior numbers drag them down. FBs clump up around each of the special warfare troopers. Once they have one, a UMB floats through space and curls into a sphere around her, hiding the brutality taking place inside from the eyes of her comrades. Each white globe serves as another girl's tomb. Same day, 1341 Standard Space Time. Even so, Minori flies through the battlefield. With her gigantic sword of flame, she cuts through the FBs in search of her missing friends. Having CC filling her vision fills her in turn with a desire to move faster and attack harder. With her erogenous zones tormented by their special enhancement gear, she charges ahead, leaving trails of sweat and love juices in her wake. Her force field flares up and ignites like it's made of some kind of ethereal oil. Her desires to fight manifest into a gigantic sword. She swings down her sword, tearing through the FBs, forcing them to abandon the ravaged corpse of another special warfare trooper. Her eyes have been gouged out and crushed. Her navel and ears have been torn off, leaving deep holes drilled in place of them. Her ruptured stomach is empty and her uterus was already torn out and taken away. She isn't a Yusha or Nana, thankfully, but she is still familiar. She was the defender from the Offensive Reconnaissance Unit, First Lieutenant Gregory. The fact that Minori was initially relieved it wasn't one of her roommates fills her with self-loathing. Still, she can't let herself be distracted for long. Sensing that she's approaching climax, the special enhancement gear's device applies powerful sedative to the CC organ in her womb. Her force field wanes immediately. Her naked form, with only her nipples and crotch covered by the special enhancement gear, is revealed to the cold of space. The FBs rush her at once, encasing her naked body within their own. They use their penis like tentacles to try and rip away the last of her protection. Then her tentacles extend from the tips of their penises, trying to prise the special enhancement gear from her skin, while others slither into her navel and ears in search of holes to invade. The mucus dripping from their tentacles soils her skin. They force her lips open, filling her mouth with a disgusting taste reminiscent of a man's cum. But even so, Minori doesn't despair. Between the writhing of the CC organ and the special enhancement gear tormenting her lewd body, she instantly regains her force field and repels the FBs. Minori evades the fate of being raped and killed by the CC for what feels like the umpteenth time. But how long can this last? She's been brought to the brink of orgasm several times already, only to be pulled back an edge by the sedative. And each time it happens, it greatly depletes her stamina. Because she isn't being allowed to come, her lust continues to build. It feels like she could burst in any second. Ah, I want to come. I want someone to fuck me silly and mess me up. What am I saying? No, I don't want that. The words slip from her tongue, only for her to immediately deny them. But becoming aware of her desire for even a moment makes her erect nipples, her clit, her pussy, and her anus all throb with lust. Her folds suck and rub against the special enhancement gear's artificial penis hungrily. Hot fluids overflow from her privates, spilling out over her inner thighs. It feels like she's going crazy. Minori begins to fear she might start acting recklessly just so the aliens will rape her. The CCs suddenly approach her like they're lured in by her weakness. Minori doesn't have the time to deploy her force field properly. She reflexively tries to dodge, but the enemy closes in on her just the same, swinging a force field crafted sword of its own. The redhead! This corpse with red hair and dark skin uses a pale blue massive sword to do battle. She's a dangerous opponent that's slain multiple special warfare troopers already. She's wearing multiple devices of special enhancement gear around her arms like bangles. She's attached the anal plugs to the clitoral stimulation rings, wearing them around her fingers. You think these are trophies? Minori's overcome with anger, which translates into explosive, offensive impulse. Her body burns with pleasure from her sensitive spots to her enraged mind, forming a gigantic sword of flames. The two approach each other with great speed, but the moment they clash, Minori hears a voice in her mind. She said, "Mommy, Mommy," at the end. Minori's resolve freezes up in terror for a moment. Her red sword clashes with the enemy's blue sword, shattering it, but the redhead herself escapes unscathed. As the redhead retreats, Minori watches her fly off, dumbfounded. Those words and that red hair, dark skin, it can't be. Is that corpse Alicia Orion? The one who was in the top 5 of their year? Minori's blue light once again bursts forth as she gives chase. That ugly form compared to Alicia's weeping face. Minori can't imagine them being the same person. But at the same time, she can't deny that the redhead looks like her. That doubt crossing her mind is fatal conceit. The redhead dives into her flank, swinging her blade. She slashes through Minori's flickering force field, shattering it to once again expose her body to the merciless vacuum of space again. The redhead extends a gnarled, bristly whip, using it to grab Minori's defenseless form. She said, "Mommy, Mommy," at the end. Sneering at her with her lipless mouth, the redhead uses her mummified hands to yank at Minori's lower device. It feels like Minori's genitals might be torn out together with a penis-like protrusions filling her anus and vagina. Minori lets out a pitiful howl of pain, bringing herself even closer to death by releasing what precious air is left in her lungs. Is she going to die here? With her womb pulled out? Anguish and terror both claw at her heart. But for better or for worse, Minori's privates are moist after hours of being on the brink of orgasm. Her own arousal provides the lubricant that helps the redhead yank away her gear. The ring gripping her swollen and gorged clitoris finally slips free. No, no, my clit! Ah! For a moment, it feels like her clitoris is being ripped from her body, but just as that fear floods through her, her special enhancement gear pops free. The sudden yank leaves her inflamed folds exposed and her vagina hanging open. As Minori faints from the shock and pain, the redhead slaps the bottom part of Minori's special enhancement gear onto her arm. But just then, Minori's hazy gaze falls into the insides of those other bracelets. One of them has the word Nana written on it. Nana, who always writes her name on everything she owns, and this scribble and permanent marker looks just like her handwriting. Minori screams. Same day, 1340 standard space time. The red unit approaches the cathedral. Lizette, Lizette! Cersei shouts, almost hopping on the operator's seat. The tense air filling headquarters seems to relax. The hero Lizette Augereau. Guardian of the cathedral, the protector god of mankind. If she wasn't there, the CC would have destroyed mankind already. That isn't an unfounded belief, but a truth rooted in fact. But their relief soon shatters. No! There are only 8 special warfare troopers under Lizette, and they're only vanguards! Lizette returns at the head of a mere 8 special warfare troopers. The 19 veterans she went into battle with have been reduced to less than half their numbers. The slower defenders and gunners fell behind and were completely wiped out by the CC pursuit. Deputy Commander Chan's order was nothing but a foolish act that spelled the cathedral's doom, and the CC falling this group of special warfare troopers. The sensor analysis is complete. Huh? This is... How is that? Major, please, finish your report. It looks like he's trying to feign the same dignity and calmness Commander Kinnison had, but his voice comes out in a strained yelp. There's over 100 UMBs and, 1,000 FBs! They all unintentionally turn their eyes to the commander's seat, only to once again recall that the reliable man that once occupied it is gone. As soon as they do, they realize they can't remember why they were so dead set on killing him. Major! Order the special warfare troopers! They're all to return to base and eliminate the CC! Fire the base's missiles and the X-ray laser too! All he's doing is verbalizing his despair in a different fashion. During the Lunar Orbit battle, the climax of the CC's invasion of Earth, all of mankind's conventional weapons proved mostly powerless against them. Saturation attacks using nuclear fission weapons did inflict some damage on them, but the CC moved with such agility that hitting them directly or even merely catching them in the blast proved difficult. Following the invasion of Earth, mankind developed an X-ray-free election laser. In theory, no matter in existence can survive exposure to such exceedingly short wavelength radiation. It is a weapon that required mankind to push itself to the limit in order to develop. The destructive weapon is so difficult to manufacture that the only functional examples of it are on the cathedral itself. But given the speed, mobility, and size of the CC flyers, actually letting a single hit with them would be despairingly difficult. Besides, when the Jewel Thief fired its beam weapon earlier, it clearly demonstrated that its range is far longer than that of the Cathedral's X-ray laser. These weapons built into the Cathedral were mostly installed as a price for the base's involvement with the military-industrial complex. They were never expected to ever be of any use. As Deputy Commander Chan's orders to base also launches several dozen missiles towards the incoming CC. They are programmed to detonate a set distance away from the veteran special warfare troopers, launching shrapnel in all directions to slice through the CC flyers. But compared to how fast the CC and special warfare troopers are flying, even the shrapnel launched by an exploding ordnance moves at a snail's pace. Nothing of how slow the missiles themselves are by comparison. It's doubtful they will ever reach their targets. Worse yet, Lisette and the veterans were already given orders to turn around, so the situation the missiles were programmed for is unlikely to ever happen in the first place. In other words, the deputy commander's orders are nothing more than an expression of HQ's despair. None of the cathedral's weapons are of any use here. Right now, mankind's only hope is for the hero Lisette to perform another miracle. As ordered, Lisette and the veterans clash with the CC flyers, but it's not long before they are swallowed up by the enemy. But even so, Lisette's red unit lets out an aura of similarly colored light. It darts free of the enemy, only to be covered by the dark mass of the FBs once again. Then in the next moment, the red light flares up once more, shedding a coat of dark fluids. The CC flyers have been repelled, revealing Lisette's heroic form once again. It happens again and again. Cersei hops in her seat, bashing on the console. At this point, she's not performing any of an operator's duties at all. She's merely spectating Lisette's battle. The other staff officers who should be trying to calm her frenzy can only helplessly watch the red unit and whisper words of encouragement. But the real danger is already sneaking up on them from another direction. Same day, 14:03 Standard Space Time. What's going on, Cersei? We need a report! Cersei, who had been doing nothing but fanatically watching Lisette to this point, hurriedly glances at another monitor. The outer walls of the cathedral have been breached! We have small CC specimens invading the base from the branches in the outer walls. They're in the male officer's residential block. Footage of the invaders is projected onto the headquarters space. What is this thing? An unusual creature is leading the invaders. An unfamiliar, and at the same time terribly familiar thing, like something that crawled out of a nightmare. They are the corpses that tormented Minori and her group. Raise the alarm, now! Yes, also, if I may offer my opinion, we should close the bulkheads. Do it now. Even I know to do that much. Even if these corpses are slightly inferior to the special warfare troopers, slightly so means these specimens are still nearly as powerful. Mere bulkhead partitions won't be capable of stopping them. Their beams and blades tear through the bulkheads like paper. The corpses storm through rooms one by one, slaughtering the off-duty male officers. First, they lop off the men's limbs. Then they cut off their genitals while forcing the officers to suck their own cocks. The aliens slash up the men's bodies. Once the corpses are finished with the men, they take the severed penises back and stuff them into their gaping crotches as if to keep count of just how many men they've killed. We cannot afford to lose the cathedral. We cannot afford to lose it. That's the one thing we must not allow. Deputy Commander Chan can only rave and scream. That's right. Call Lisette. Call Lisette. 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 Cersei calls out. Lisette, Lisette, come back! Save the cathedral! Lisette's red unit, which was cutting into the CC, rushing her like a swarm of locusts, suddenly turns around and speeds towards the cathedral. Doing so, however, renders her defenseless to the CC's attacks. As Lisette tries to escape at her top speed, the CC attack her and quickly penetrate her force field. Same day, 14:12 Standard Space Time. The swarming CC tear through the red unit, ripping away the layers of armor plating. Inside the shattered unit, now revealed, is Lisette. Her body is nude, save for a headpiece. Surrounding her inside the unit's confines are what look like slimy, naked girls. Lisette moans and drools, her mouth hanging open in a slovenly fashion. The person sitting inside the contraption is not a hero. She's nothing more than a cripple being towed around by a machine. Lisette is incapable of thinking of anything. She's a flesh puppet being controlled by the electronic brain in the headpiece she's wearing, and manipulates her relying on accumulated combat data to form combat routines. And yet, she's still a living female. She's a twitching, lustful vagina that calls for the CC. within her uterus is an active CC organ. It seems like the CC are intent on treating her just as they have all the other girls. The FB's penis-like tentacles shoot toward the vagina of this mentally crippled girl, preparing to yank out her uterus. At the same time, in another space sector, Minori screams out as well. Same day, 14:13 standard space time. The CC organ reacts to Minori's will, pulsating as if imitating her howl. Sensual pleasure jolts through her nerves like an electric current. Her entire reproductive system is burning up. The parts of her special enhancement gear that weren't taken by the redhead torment her nipples even more ardently. How dare you kill Nana! Nana! I'll kill you! Kill you! Minori opens the door inside her once again. Intense, unbelievable power wells up inside her. Being the overly serious girl that she is, she despises her lustful side. She never allowed herself to open that door inside her since then, but the thought that Nana might be dead completely releases her from those fetters. Her eyes moisten, her mouth hangs half open, and sweet, hot breaths escape her lips. Her aroused body twitches, dripping with sweat, and her clit nipples are painfully erect. Love juices gush out of her vagina, and intestinal fluid drips from her anus. Fluids pour down her thighs. Right now, Minori is both an enraged soldier and an aroused female. After all the drugs she'd been administered, increasing her sexual sensitivity, and all the degrading training she'd been put through, the chalice of her lust is even larger than it was last time. As her body writhes seductively, a white, shining force field surges forth, expanding all around her. The light consumes the redhead, reducing her to ashes. Right as it does, a violent torrent of color rushes through Minori's mind. I hate it, I hate it, I hate it, I hate it, I hate everything. I wish nothing existed, no men, no women, no sex, nothing, not the cathedral or the CC or the earth. I don't need any of them, let them all disappear, let them all be reduced to nothing. Alicia Orion, or rather, the thing that used to be her. Minori can't fathom even 1/10,000th of the things she's seeing and hearing. I don't need anything. Let them all disappear. The Earth and society and all the men and me who fucked them. I don't want to break to be broken or see how I break myself. And I wish all the idiots who say I'm doing well would disappear. She sees a refugee camp shining like a prism of hatred. The camp skull, a UEF uniform, a special warfare trooper aptitude test disguised as career examination. Ugh, I'm so tired, so damn tired. I don't care anymore. Just disappear. Mommy, 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 where are you? I can't see you. Where are you? Let's disappear. Yes, let's disappear. I'm going to disappear. An arm tugs on her, a small child's arm. She walks on a shore led by that arm. But there's nothing ahead of that arm. It's not attached to anything. It's only an arm. Mommy, mommy, I know. Mommy, you want to go back. Just go back. So go back. Let's disappear. Go back. Mommy, mommy. Something bursts, disappearing without a trace. Everyone but her is gone. I want to go back. I want to go back somewhere. It's cold. It's cold here. There's no one here. I'm all alone. Alone and cold. A blue sky. An azure curtain of sky hanging over a desert. Tropical palm trees. A girl brimming with hope sprints through the scenery. Her laughter rolling in the wind. Ah, the weather's so nice today. I can go anywhere today. I know it. When she was young, the world was hers for the claiming. Was. Past tense. Where should I go today? Minori reaches out earnestly as if trying to catch what's about to be lost. Mommy! The fragments of those thoughts sparkle in Minori's hand, and then they vanish. Minori knew nothing about her. Minori was so terribly ignorant. It feels like the sensation of the hand that tugged on her in that dream will soon vanish too. But even so, she won't forget that Alicia Oran once existed. She mustn't forget. But even as that sorrow fills her, the force field around Minori Izuka swells up, turning into the form of a giant shining with brilliant light. And at the same time, as Cersei screams, she sends out a special transmission. She doesn't do it willingly. It surges out of her unintentionally. But her screams are in vain. The FPs tear off the headpiece, revealing the face of the mentally crippled girl beneath it. However, the crippled girl's eyes are shining brilliantly. Overwhelming strength surges behind that clear gaze. I swear, Cersei, you always cry so quickly. Guess I've got to get to work, huh? An immensely powerful force field shoots out from Lizette's body. It smashes the half-destroyed red unit to bits and blasts the strange figures of naked women surrounding her into dust. The hero's on the scene! Oh, what? She blows away the FBs around her. Standing in the center of the surging light is a single special warfare trooper. Like a Valkyrie straight out of the realm of legend. The guardian of Earth! No, of all mankind! Lizette Agarao! Cersei excitedly bashes the screen, tears streaming down her cheeks. You don't have to scream, dummy! I can hear you! Was there ever a time when you called for me and I didn't come? Gosh, you always start bawling at the drop of a hat! This hero's voice is like the chattering of a mischievous child. A kid who thinks she can be anyone and do anything. But... Ah ha ha! Just let me handle this! What was that noise just now? Yes, no, the enemy broke through all the bulkheads. They're invading the deployment port. To do something, they'll destroy the cathedral's core at this rate. But the deputy commander can only shout. He's of no use whatsoever. You guys sound like you're panicking. What happened? The CC got into the deployment port. Wow, that's bad. I'll let the Missy take care of this side. Open the port. I'll go in. The Missy. That's Lizette's nickname for Lee Conway, who deserted the cathedral years ago. Something wrong? The Missy can take care of this easy as pie. But right, please hurry. Same day, 1416 Standard Space Time. As they slaughter the off-duty male officers, the corpses lead the CC forces into the base's hub. They tear through the bulkheads and reach the deployment port. The corpses stop for some reason. Unlike the hub, this section of the base has gravity, but that's not enough to explain this strange pause. They look around the place, deliveries step on the floors a few times and even caress them. It's like they're savoring their return to a familiar place. One of the courts kicks down a door on the other side of the deployment port and goes inside. The others continue their strange appreciation of the place. The air starts draining from the port. If these invaders were human, they would be suffocating, but the corpses and the FBs are unaffected by the lack of oxygen. The ceiling opens, revealing the dark void of the space sector outside. And from there, a large human-shaped shadow plunges headfirst into the port. It's a special warfare trooper wielding a red sword. Lizette Agarao. As soon as she lands, she slashes through the corpses in her way. Wahaha! This place is crawling with bad guys, but you ran out of luck when I showed up. She darts freely around the port, effortlessly slaying the FBs and the corpses. The corpses' force fields form prismatic barriers, but she slashes through them like a knife through hot butter. When the remaining corpses shoot at her from behind, she grabs another corpse's remains and uses them as a shield before dashing in on her attackers and cutting them to pieces. The FBs can't keep up with their speed. They scatter every which way, with their numbers dwindling as they get caught in the crossfire of Lizette's battle with the corpses. Same day, 1420, Standard Space Time. Cleanup's done! She breaks through the blue sword of the final corpse, carrying the momentum of her attack in a follow-through to slash the corpse itself apart. You're weak, weak, way too weak. The zombies were kind of annoying and kept moaning stuff, but they're still weak. They were just a little annoying. She's swift and overwhelmingly powerful. 10 corpses and over 40 FBs invaded the sortie port, but she wiped them all out in 5 minutes. However, one corpse remains. It invaded the guest room, slaughtering the media crew that came to cover the battle. The corpse is coated in blood. The penises and wounds of the media crew members are stuffed into its torn crotch. Ugh, gruesome. Lysette lets out a prayful screech as she cuts it to pieces without a moment's hesitation. And done! I'll go clean up the ones outside then. At the sight of this stunning victory, the integrated headquarters is reduced to utter silence. Despite how reliable this defender of mankind is, they can't rejoice. She's simply too overwhelming. Cersei alone gazes at her with ecstatic eyes. Go, Lizette. It'll be easy for you. Oh, you're so cool. Okay, so I'm gonna end it here for now. Don't worry, we're going right back to it because I'm like really fucking into this. So, we're gonna find out exactly what happens when Lizette takes on the... I don't know, is she gonna be able to beat the jewel thief again? I don't know, it would be an interesting end for a visual novel where a lot of shit's been really despair lately. It's been really grim, dark, and despair. But things have been kind of cool. I didn't think she was just gonna, you know, pop up and save the fucking day. Wow, completely unexpected manga shit, right? At any rate, this is the Grim Lord, and I'm out for Grimm's Hentai Corner. We'll see you next time with more... we'll see you tomorrow with more Dead and Aegis. Stay tuned.